Well, good morning, everyone. Fantastic to see you again. Jeremy, I need to apologize. I've slightly changed my agenda for this morning. As a former ad man, I know this is illegal, but there you go. In the Trades Description Act, I'm not actually going to do what it says on the tin. I'm going to do what it says on the tin tomorrow, today, and I've got something slightly different. I felt I should bring you something slightly different tomorrow. So today, we are actually going to look at something called fruitfulness. But let me tell you, remind us where we are. Life's a peach, not an orange. And you can have a think about that. That's my attempt at a Jesus parable. That's it, I'll sit down now and you can work it out. And, so what have we been doing? We've been looking at the implications of being created in the image of God, of being called to Christ and commanded to make disciples as his representative rulers, as his vice regents, a high calling indeed. And what difference does that make in the places where we find ourselves day by day by day, seeking, if you like, seeking and praying to bring Christ's kingdom shalom to the places we find ourselves, the people we meet, the task we do, to the glory of God. We've been, if you like, trying to think about that in terms of, all right, what does it mean to bring shalom into the church community, to bring shalom into a workplace or into a painting group or into whatever it is that you do during the week, into my family, into my neighborhood? We've been reminded by James Robson of this. What are the implications of this for everyday Monday to Saturday life? And we've recalled that this is centered on the work of Christ. This isn't just something that anybody's dreamed up. Wouldn't it be a good idea if we did everything to the glory of Jesus? No, his big mission was to indeed bring shalom, redemption, restoration to all things. That is why he shed his blood on the cross. And we now work with him to make the world as much like he would like it to be before he returns to complete his glorious work. That's the place that we find ourselves in. His kingdom come, his will be done, wherever we might be, on earth as it in heaven. But as Jeremy reminded us, this is not necessarily the way that we have been programmed, might be a way to put it. We've been taught to see the world, that the world is actually, it all does matter. There is no real sacred, secular divide here. And yesterday we began to look at why your particular work from housework, and we discovered yesterday, much to everybody's, or some people's sorrow, that housework does matter to God, which is a great irritation for some of you. And it turns out to be a great encouragement for the rest of us, that indeed there are ways in which most of our work might bring order, provision, joy, beauty, and the release of potential. Now, I do need to fulfill all righteousness in a couple of ways before we go on. First of all, I need to tell you, I forgot to promote my book yesterday. And can you imagine? I'm such a bad ad man. You know, Johnny, Mr. Carswell would not have forgotten to promote one of his books, I can tell you. Anyway, this book is called Thank God It's Monday, It's Ministry in the Workplace. As a matter of interest, many of you, obviously you all work, but this one is primarily in the employed zone. If you've been employed, have you ever read a book on work? Who's read a book on work in their life? So many people haven't. I mean, Carswell's going to run out by the end of the day. No, it's a reality that actually lots of people haven't actually ever read a book on work, though they do a lot of it. And that is actually another symptom of the sacred-secular divide, or it may be a symptom of the quality of the books, perhaps. But my mother regards this, regarded this, as the best book ever written. Hey. It's been bought over there. Mr. Russo has bought a copy. Yep, not many left. A lot left in the world, but not many left on the shelves. By the way, my mother was always right. The other last bit of fulfilling all righteousness has to do with the Leibniz's equations, Euler's identity. And I did mention that I'm not great at maths, and I got an email from Professor John Lennox correcting my maths, I think. And then I was approached by a maths teacher yesterday evening. There is no escape. So unless there are other people coming to tell me that I got it slightly wrong, I think they both agreed that this is one of the most beautiful equations there is, and the reasons for that. But what I got wrong was that I, in this thing, is an imaginary number, not an irrational number. And pi and e are irrational numbers, but irrational does not mean that they don't make sense. And I think I'm going to leave it there. Next year, Jeremy has promised me that there will be 4 sessions on the theology of maths, and I won't be doing them. So, make a difference wherever you are. We are created, called, commissioned to bear fruit. We heard this in John 15 the other evening from Ephraim. All fruit, if you like, godly fruit, comes from abiding in Christ. If you like, abiding in the vine. All fruit is grape-flavored, if you like, whatever it might be. And as Jesus says, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. And so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. Now, I wonder how fruitful you feel. Ephraim located that, if you like, that first fruitfulness in our allegiance and faithfulness to Christ. What I'm going to explore today is the other ways in which we might be fruitful. I wonder how fruitful you feel. I wonder, as you look back perhaps on last year or the last 6 months or the last week, what would your highlights be? What would your highlights be? Now, for those of you who are familiar with the work that we've done at LICC on fruitfulness on the front line, I want to reassure you that though the frame is the same, all the stories today are different. So I hope you will nevertheless benefit from it. So let me give you the frame of this. One of the things that we've found across the years is that many Christians do not feel themselves to be very fruitful. I mean, I look at people and go, wow, look at you. Look at the things you're doing. Look at how you're treating this person. Look at your ministry in that context. I'm just kind of amazed. But they don't feel very fruitful. And this really came home to me forcefully a while back. I was invited to a place called Scotland. I wouldn't dare go without an invitation. And to work with 10 people, youngish people, 20s and very early 30s, invited by Mission Scotland to work with 10 people who had a yearning to make a difference in the workplace. And so we were going up there to try to stand alongside them, actually learn from them so I could write another book. Thank God it's Wednesday, or something like that. And we saw them as a potential kind of, you know, the new SAS for the workplace, people who would be the next teachers, the next advocates, champions, mentors, come alongside kind of people. We had a housewife, we had a retail assistant, jewelry shop, a graphic designer, a teacher, a banker, a head teacher, a GP, a project manager, an actress, quite a range of people. And as we began after the second session, I went up every 3 months for 2 days, we noticed something. None of these competent, well-taught people in really good churches, despite their passion for the workplace, none of them thought they had anything to offer anyone else or that they were doing anything particularly special in their own place. And we're going, what? You know, one guy set up what I think, I don't know what you call it in Scotland, but the equivalent of NHS 24 in Scotland, the GP who's helped to set that up. Well, that's a pretty significant thing to do by any measure. Somebody else, the jewellery guy, was the best-selling jewellery assistant in the shop at 24 years old, and he did it completely different from anybody else. And so it went on. One was a head teacher, and she turned round 2 schools in East Glasgow. And East Glasgow is not Mayfair. 2 schools from what the English call special measures into good schools. Incredible contribution, incredible achievement. Turned round a team of 3, never mind a school. And think about the impact on all those children and on their carers and guardians and parents and on the whole community. We may live in a really difficult area, but we've got a good school. There's hope for our kids. Couldn't see it. They were confident, if you like, workers, but not very confident disciples. Well, we began to wonder why that was. And I think one of the reasons they couldn't see it was because they had a very narrow view of what human fruitfulness looks like in Christ. They had essentially narrowed it down to three things. These are all good things, by the way. Volunteering in the church. We need to do that. It's a good thing to do. Direct social action. That is, I'm helping with a food bank, or I'm taking meals to somebody next door, something like that. And evangelistic conversations. Those are all good things. And there are all sorts of things. Those are the sorts of things that get affirmed in a local church. Thanks very much for doing that. It's really important. Really appreciate it, and so on. But the problem is, on an average day, if you're at school or if you're at university or college or if you're in a sort of standard kind of workplace, you're not going to get to do any of those things because you're not volunteering in the church at that moment. You're not necessarily doing direct social action. That's actually your job. And you don't have an evangelistic conversation every day. You may have a conversation that is salted with the wisdom of the Bible, but you may not have an evangelistic conversation every day, or even every week, or even every month. So what they thought was, well, we've done nothing for God. Nothing that really counts. So one of the things I think we need to help one another see, and I'll come back to that one anothering in a moment, we need to help one another see is the ability to read our own lives through a biblical lens. The ability to read our whole life through a biblical lens. Let me tell you a little story. I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk to one another, as usual, in a minute, after I've told you this story. I'm going to tell you this story pretty much in the way that it happened. So I was in a group of 15, it was men, 15 men. It was a men's group, so there were men there. There you go. And the guy was leading it. He was in telecoms, and he asked us this question. He said, what are you good at in the Lord at work? Well, it's a slightly jargony question. All right, so this is Southern England. He's asking 15 Southern men, what are you good at in the Lord at work? Well, what do you think happened in the room after that? Absolutely crunching silence. You know, Southern men, we want you to know that we're really good at everything, but we're certainly not going to tell you. And so I think he anticipated this because he had these post-it notes all over the room. So, well, why don't you write it down on a post-it note? So we all wrote something down on a post-it note, and then he collected them up and he said, well, you've written it down, you might as well speak it out. Very clever. So here's the first guy to go. His name was Kurt, and I'm going to tell you this the way he said it, and I'm going to invite you to talk to two or three people around you. You might want to introduce yourself to another human. Be bold, be brave, the Lord your God is with you. This is how he told the story. Looking down at the coffee table. My name is Kurt, and some of you know I'm a policeman. Actually, I'm in armed protection. And we're going, armed protection, you have got our attention. Guns, boys, fantastic. Yes, all of that. I protect the Prime Minister at number 10 Downing Street. Okay. And he says, well, it's quite a macho team. And, well, probably, at one level, these are people who are wearing Kevlar, these are people with weapons, these are people who are prepared to be shot at to protect our political leaders and the political leaders of other countries. Quite a macho team, and over the years, it's been quite a lot of conflict, actually. But I found that I'm quite good at bringing people back together. So imagine you're in the room. What struck you, and what might you have said if you'd been in the room? So have a little conversation, introduce yourself to somebody if you don't know them, have a little conversation for a few minutes, and then we'll come back to that. I think it's too late now. Thank you, Gaynor, though. I'm sorry, I should have told you. I've completely forgotten that I hadn't told you. Well, no, normally what it says on the tin is what is coming. No, I did talk to James about it, and I said, I don't think this mind body spirit thing is the right way to go beforehand, and I didn't pass it on to you, I'm really sorry. But no. Okay. All right. Just a quick question for the team. Do we have the roving mics? Do we have the roving mic? No, we don't. Okay. Let me try to do something really, really difficult now. Anybody moderately close got any comments for me so that we can hear them and I'll relay them? Anything strike you from that? What struck you? Service, he's serving people. Yes, thank you. Go for it. Courage, yes, thank you. Anything else? Commitment. You want to know a bit more? I'd love to say buy my book, but I can't. That was such an opportunity, wasn't it? Yeah. He got a very valuable job, but he did not recognize its value with the people in the room. Notice the body language. Yes, thank you very much. Anything else? Sorry? A peacemaker. Indeed. Yes, very good. Anything else? We wondered whether if he was carrying a gun, he wasn't doing a Christian job. Yes, indeed. All kinds of things. One more, or two more. Humility. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Prepared to die. Yeah, I had never really thought about that. Brave. Yeah. Well, what happened in the room was there was a silence for a bit, and then somebody said this: you've got a ministry of reconciliation. And this guy's face was like a Liberace, if you remember Liberace, a Liberace grin. I've got a ministry of reconciliation. No, he didn't go like that. He was quite a modest man, a humble man. But, you know, it was that. His face lit up. Oh, my goodness. And then somebody said what the lady said over there. You've been a peacemaker. Suddenly, whoosh. Oh, yes. That's right. Why couldn't I see it? The people of God helped him, helped us all, see what God was doing through him. And the difference was, what's the difference? Is they named it using biblical categories. He was bringing reconciliation. He was being a peacemaker. And he was actually making the prime minister and other people more secure. Because as I understand it, I'm not obviously not a soldier, but as I understand it from people who are in what they call high jeopardy jobs, trust in the team is absolutely critical. You've got to completely trust the person next to you to do exactly what they're meant to do. That's why SAS teams, you know, the bond between the SAS teams is really, really strong. The kind of love and care for one another is really strong. So he's actually doing a lot of things. So here's a guy who doesn't think he's got a story, but he's actually teaching people the ways of Jesus' forgiveness at number 10 Downing Street. I bet you he feels a bit better now. But the reality is he could have been teaching people the ways of Jesus' forgiveness in a school or at a school gate or in a care home. The location is not the point here, is it? The point here is he was doing something that he couldn't see until the people of God helped him. But maybe he could see it if he started thinking that it was valuable, his job, and that actually bringing people back together is actually about reconciliation and forgiveness. if he could begin to look at what he was doing through a biblical lens. This is called This Is That. This bringing people back together is peacemaking. This is that. This protects his blessed other peacemakers. That's what he was actually doing. This is that. So one of the skills we try to develop for one another is to help one another see what is God doing. This is like that. This is like that. Yeah. Eyes to see then. Read our whole lives through biblical lenses. Eyes to see what's already happening. Eyes to imagine what might be. I'm going to give you one story of what might be, and then we're going to look at this framework of fruitfulness. This story about a woman called Mary. Mary got early onset arthritis about the age of 30, and when we met her, she was in her late 50s. And sometimes when people get an affliction, really a disease like that, quite early on, it can rock their confidence. And she wasn't a terribly confident person. She loved the church, did lots of stuff in the church, and so on, but didn't really feel that she had a mission field, a place where she could do things for the Lord. And then she did some of this material, and then she realized that there was one place where she could really make an impact for the Lord, and it was in her hydrotherapy class. Because nobody else in the church could get in the pool with those people. And so she decided to be their secret pastor, if you like. She began to organize lifts for people and, you know, find out how people were if they didn't turn up and all of those sorts of things, creating a community. Out of something quite difficult came this really beautiful ministry. Yeah. So here's a framework for us that I hope you can find helpful. I'm going to just name it, and then I'm going to tell you what it looks like, and then we're going to drill down a bit into it. And as we go through this, I hope what you'll see is how God has already been working through you. And therefore, this will be an opportunity by the end of it for you to give thanks and praise to God for the ways in which he has been working through you that you may not have seen, or that the person who knows you, perhaps you've come with, say, you're like that. That's what you do. So 6 M's, how might I model godly character? How might I make good work? How might I minister grace and love, make culture, be a mouthpiece for truth and justice, be a messenger of the gospel? And what might that look like in a barista? Well, a barista gets to model a Christ-like character every day by displaying the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. When the queue is out the door on a Monday morning and it is raining and there is someone standing in front of you going, I think I'd like a double shot skinny latte with chocolate sprinkles and a dash of hazelnut syrup. No, vanilla syrup. No, hazelnut. What do you think? Et cetera, et cetera. You know, patience, if you like. A barista gets to make good work in the power of the Spirit to God's glory by making good coffee. Making sure the milk isn't burnt, getting the espresso shot into the steam milk in the required time, which apparently is 10 seconds for a latte. A barista gets to minister love and grace, take an extra 20 seconds with a customer in the queue who's, you can tell, is not having a great day. You can't talk to everybody, but you can talk to some people. If you've ever served coffee or tea at church, you know that. You can't talk to everyone, but you're trying to discern who is the person in the queue that I just, you know, spend a few extra seconds with. Or to deliberately pause as you're clearing a table of the dishes. You know, who am I going to talk to when I do that? You get to mold the culture of a coffee shop, make it a special place to be, make it that bit more welcoming. We've all been to places, haven't we, where, you know, you walk into a coffee shop, if that's the sort of thing that you do, and you see a particular person and your heart lifts. It's Sophie. It's going to be a good day. She's always pleased to see me. There are two people called Russell and Shirley who are part of the security group here. They are just terrific. They're always smiling. People are hugging them by the end of the week. I mean, they're just fantastic people. And I've talked to them quite a long time. That's what happens to them. They're bouncers usually. And they very rarely get any trouble. They're just warm and lovely, pleased to see them. On the other hand, it's Ed. And Ed's on today. And I'm thinking, Ed is a downer. Ed is a chiller. Ed is on. I think I'm going to go home. I'm going to take out a sachet of Nescafe. I'm going to take it off. I'm going to pour it in a cup, and I'm going to put cold water on it. I'd frankly rather have that than be here. So you mold a culture, don't you, in simple ways. Be a mouthpiece for truth and justice as a barista. Well, actually, you know, what's fair? You stop the gossip in the team. What's fair? Oh, goodness me, I asked that I wouldn't do Sunday so I can go to church, but actually, Zoe is on three Sundays in a row. So I go to Zoe and say, do you want to have, you know, that's not really right. I'll do a Sunday for you, you know, truth and justice. And of course, there's the opportunity over time to be a messenger for the gospel to the team or with some customers, perhaps in your break or whatever it might be. Well, the point about those six M's is five of them you get to do every day. Every day, you're always doing something. You go to the gym, you either pick up the towel from the floor or you don't. You're either kind to people or not. Every day, you get to do those six. Let me give you another example. This is a little film.
Jessica became a first-time mum during the pandemic. What do the six M's of fruitfulness look like for her? Giving birth in lockdown was hard. Breastfeeding was an agony of tears and blood, and no relative, no friend, no health visitor, no one could come and help. So modelling godly character involved constantly reminding herself that Jesus came to serve, not to be served. It meant putting her daughter's needs first, even when she barely had the strength to pray for the strength to get through the day. Making good work means changing a nappy for her daughter in a humble, engaged way. She does whatever she can to calm her with singing, talking, and always being gentle. Jessica realized that there were lots of other first-time mums feeling isolated and exhausted. So she ministered grace and love beyond her family by creating an Instagram account to share her insights, her poems of pain and comfort, molding a community culture of vulnerability and compassion. She became a mouthpiece for truth and justice, the truth about what lockdown mums were going through. She made a commitment to bring wisdom and support to over 250 women following her, paying for someone to access a feeding specialist, sourcing a special breast pump, offering the right tip, seeking to love each one with the love of Christ. And she's content as a God-trusting messenger of the gospel, to walk along the road with friends till they ask her about why she does all of this. And then she'll tell them about the daily grace of Jesus Christ who gets her through. How do you see the six M's at work in your life?
Yeah, modelling godly character. That's obviously the first one. Love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I wonder how you see those in your life. Sometimes it can be a very small thing. I didn't murder any of my teenagers today. Set yourself a low bar. You know? Or actually, I was patient. This is difficult. I'm a bit more patient this year than I was last year. I was loving, I was kind in that situation. And thank God for the measure that you've grown in. I wonder what fruit of the Spirit you would most like to have. I was once giving a talk, and the guy introducing me, a colleague, introduced me and around this theme. And I said, so what fruit of the Spirit would you like me to have right now, Charles? I said to him. He said, self-control. You've got half an hour. So making good work. We've done a lot on work already, so I hope you are convinced of the ways in which can be fruitful for God. But I just want to talk about it in terms of the power of the Spirit. That is, we don't just do it. We do it in the power of the Spirit, and we are seeking God's wisdom for a task. We're seeking God's, sometimes, his intervention. And I want to tell you a spectacular story. I think this story actually may be in the book, though it's not on the films. The story about a woman called Maz. She is a Scot from Glasgow, one of those 10 people. And she was working on an urban regeneration project. She was helping regenerate a small town on the southwest coast of Scotland. And she got to the end of this project, or nearly the end. And then she realized that there was a particular bit of this project that she didn't know how to do, and none of her contractors knew how to do, which was to affix granite plaques to the seawall. And the reason why this was so significant, this adhesion of granite plaques to the seawall, was because those granite plaques were going to carry the story of the town. It was their talking wall. And it was there that, if you like, when the project was ended, the mayor would come, the MP would come, the press would come, the town would come, and they would celebrate what's happened, celebrate the history of the town, look forward to the future of the town together. So they were, in some ways, absolutely critical. But it wasn't a big job. She couldn't find anybody to do it. So she then did something really radical, revolutionary in her life. And I do not use those words. You may think I exaggerate sometimes. In this case, it is absolutely true. I have it on film. This changed her life, what she next did. Not just her working life. This changed her life. She decided to ask the Lord God, the King of the universe, for wisdom about how to stick granite plaques on the seawall of a small town on the southwest coast of Scotland. So she prayed. And immediately after she prayed, this thought popped into her mind, and the thought was, yellow pages. They do still exist. So she starts leafing through the yellow pages. You know, why am I leafing through yellow pages? What's going on here? And she comes across sign writers. Ah, sign writers make signs. And then what do with them? They hang them up, or they stick them up. I wonder if the sign writer, whose shop I pass every day when I go and buy sandwiches, knows how to do this. So she calls him up. Yes, we do. You can go down the coast. We've done it somewhere else and have a look. Now, the point about this for her, if you like, was what she realized at this point was that actually God, the King of the universe, with nearly 8 billion people to be concerned about and a lot of stars on the far edge that were misbehaving, King of the universe actually cared about the adhesion of granite plaques to a seawall on the southwest coast of Scotland. And it changed her life because she suddenly realized that she could take that into anything. It changed her home life. She has never said that every time she prays for a parking space, she gets one. God has his own regeneration project and it doesn't always fit in. But what she has said is that she realizes it's important to him. And there's the talking wall, and there is Maz on the right there in red, in LICC red, in gratitude. So, doing good work with God. And I'm sure you've got lots of stories like that. I'm going to tell you one more now. This is a story of a woman called Lou, who's it actually belongs to a church that does pray for people for their front lines. And she's the matron of an A&E department, and this happened in a hospital during the pandemic, and it was in the January wave, the second wave, and the department was completely swamped. And as the sort of A&E matron, she goes out onto the forecourt when she came in. It was completely jam-packed with ambulances, COVID and non-COVID patients. There was no space to put anyone in there, no space to even safely offload patients. So she went back to her team, and her team were actually in tears. I mean, many of you were there, weren't you? So you know they were completely overwhelmed. And so she walked outside, said to the Lord, "I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do, Lord." And so she just prayed, and she said it was the most simple prayer ever, just a plea. "Lord, please give us a reprieve, just a small reprieve." So she had to go up to a leaders' meeting on a different floor, and she came back down to A&E a few minutes later, and there were no ambulances there. And no ambulance came in. She said, this is recorded, for 2 to 3 hours. She didn't actually specify within that time, for 2 to 3 hours. And nobody could believe it. Some miracles you only know because you're in them. And she said, he gave us that reprieve. I'm quoting her now. He gave that ability to sort it out for the next wave. That reprieve was what I needed. Yes, it was God-given, absolutely. Now, again, I wonder what you hear. What's the biblical equivalent of that? Well, there are many, really, but it reminded me of Mark 4, the disciples in the boat with Jesus on the Sea of Galilee. Don't you care? Don't you care? And the storm comes and the boat is swamped and they're crying out to Jesus, wondering if he cares. And Jesus stills the storm. It's not exactly the same, is it? But it's the same God stilling a storm. And we see this ways in which God helps people do work in a different way, gives them different wisdom in all kinds of ways. And I don't want to say that these are not just, you know, these happen, if you like, only in small organizations or only to individuals. There are lots of examples. Some of you are familiar with Gary Grant and The Entertainer, not opening on Christmas Eve, never opening on a Sunday. When it fell on Sunday and Christmas Eve, it cost him £2 million not to open that day. And it was celebrated in the Daily Mail. That's not necessarily always the greatest accolade, but there it was. There are toys he doesn't take because he won't take them because he doesn't think that they are honoring to God. The Oh My God doll, for example, he wouldn't take. It was the biggest selling doll that year, the OMG doll. And so it goes on. These are not just small things. It's 135 stores. It's a costly decision. But as he said, he does not have a prosperity theology at all. But he does feel that the Lord's hand has been with him in his business. So small things that we do in the power of the Spirit a long time, and big things that we do. And then there's ministering grace and love, and there's all kinds of ways to do that, as you know. This story about a woman who's called Nicola Marfleet. She's the prison governor at Her Majesty's Prison Woodhill. It's an all-male prison. And again, that's a tough environment. And she discovered that one of her prison officer's mothers had died, and he'd taken some time off. And one day he came home with his wife during that mourning period, and there was a little card on the mat on the inside of the house which said, you know, there's a parcel for you around the side, flowers. And he said to his wife, well, they'll be for you, so why don't you go get them? So she goes and gets them and says, no, they're for you. And it was from a prison governor to a prison officer. Now, you might do that for a friend, and maybe you're in a workplace where that kind of thing happens. I am. But not many people are. And this is the prison service. It's a very hierarchical organization. And he burst into tears, and when he came back to work, he went to see the prison governor, which is not something you do every day, asked to see her, and just said, I could not believe what you did for me, that somebody at work would care for me in that way. Well, it could be a cup of tea. It could be a Tunnock's caramel wafer. Yes, yes. I have 7 of them left. Should get me through to the end of tomorrow. So then there's this ministering grace and love, and then there is molding culture. So how do we mold a culture? It sounds like a very big idea, molding a culture, but actually we all do it all the time. There's a definition of culture, which is this. Culture is the way we do things around here. This is from Archbishop Derek Warlock, who was the Archbishop Cardinal of Liverpool, a Catholic man, and something of an expert on culture within that denomination. And the story goes that one day the Pope had sent a group of Vatican prelates to Liverpool to talk to him about culture. And these prelates came back from the Vatican to Rome, and the Pope asked them, so what is culture? And they said, culture is the way they do things in Liverpool. I'm not sure too many Glaswegians would agree with that. But the point about it is culture, it's kind of obvious, isn't it? Culture is the way we do things around here. I imagine that, you know, all our homes are different. You go into somebody's home and they do this, they do that. You pick up your knife in a different way. You have tea and you invited me for tea and it turns out for me, it turns out to be dinner. I thought I was getting a cup of tea or sandwich. No, this is a four-course meal. Thank you very much. You know, these words mean something different and we all bring up our children slightly differently and so on. You know, my mother's attitude to guests was essentially, you know, that they come through the door. And when I was little, this was very embarrassing. As a sort of 6, 7, 8-year-old boy, my friends would come in and my mother's basic attitude to them was, if it moves, kiss it. And if it's still moving, feed it. But I just had dinner. Doesn't matter. Eat. And so on. That's the way that kind of she did things around here. And so it comes a set of values, you know, our values or our core beliefs shape who our heroes are. Who are the heroes in the church? We have a value, and not to bring a downer, but that, you know, the sacred secular divide tells us who the heroes are. The heroes are not usually the plumbers and the electricians and the first-time mum helping people with breast pumps, or somebody caring for a spouse at home, day in, day out. Those are not usually the heroes, though they are heroes. That's not the stories we tell. So the culture shapes things, the priorities and so on. And of course, what we're looking for is a Christos, shalom culture. Now, just give me a little thought about how easy this is actually to begin to do in churches. And this afternoon, I'm going to be talking to some church leaders about this and commend the material on the website. For church leaders, we've got a lot of material to help them do this if they are so minded. But just take a very simple thing like a song like, Be Thou My Vision, O Lord of My Heart, nought be all else to me save that Thou art. Now, you might have that on a plain slide because you want people to be able to read it really easily, but quite often these days people put some beautiful view behind it, don't they? That's what they would tend to do. Here's something lovely and actually does lift the soul, doesn't it? Or something like that. There's lots of beautiful things you can do with them. But it's very rare to have a slide that does that. Or that does that. A not so wonderful part of the world, perhaps, physically. Or that. What happens when you put those lyrics behind those images is something very different, isn't it? Be thou my vision on an oil rig. I didn't want to embarrass you, Jeremy, but apparently you didn't do it today, so this is the picture that Elizabeth has sent me. You know, you're a big minister, but you need to do your stuff, you know. And this is a club. It's outside Leeds if you want to know where to go. But you see the difference. It's a mindset. You're still putting a slide up, but what I have behind it changes how we think about it. Well, many things can be like that. So culture, what is it? Let me tell you a story of somebody who sought to change a culture. I'm going to tell you two stories. One's a Schoolgate story, and this one is a work story. So this is about a woman called Anita Kapila. There she is. And at the time, she was a pharmaceutical research scientist working in a pharmaceutical company. And she was working in single-unit facilities. Are there any scientists in the room? I may be safe today, then. One or two, perhaps. So single-unit facilities, so the scientists would come in and they'd put on their coats and they'd go into the single-unit facility. And every now and then, they'd kind of pop the head out, scuttle down to the kitchen. They'd take some H2O from the tap, put it in a beaker, put it under the Bunsen burner, heat it up to 100 degrees Celsius, then take some granules that had been originally grown from beans, grown in temperate climates between 3,000 to 6,000 feet, and then roasted at 454 degrees Fahrenheit, and then ground down. They added that to the beacon, then they scuttled back, and they had their cup of coffee in their single-unit facility. And Anita thought, this is not good. This is, first of all, boring. It's relationally arid, it's like a desert, it's not even good for the science. We're not talking to each other, we're not learning anything from each other, and so on and so forth. So being a scientist, she decided to conduct an experiment. What percentage of research scientists will emerge from their single unit facilities at 10:30 on a Friday morning if offered hot fresh brewed coffee and chocolate biscuits. And she discovered that 96.371% William Oat, and so on. Now, very interestingly, it was great. And of course, you know, they chatted about this, they chatted about that, they probably chatted about football or fashion or what's going on in the economy and this and that and so on and so forth. They also talked about the work. And they also got close to one another. And it also actually enlivened the day and all of those sorts of things. So what did she do? Well, she identified an issue. She didn't accept the status quo. Doesn't have to be this way. She thought of a kingdom antidote. What can I do that might actually shift this? And she gave it a go. Well, maybe no one would have turned up. It might have failed. It would still have been a good thing to try. Not everything works. Interestingly, 6 months later, she left that company. And 6 months afterwards, she discovered that because no one else was prepared to play, you know, make coffee and bring in biscuits, the morale in the team was so low, the team dynamics were so bad that the company had to bring in a consultancy to do team building exercises with that team in the evening. Can you imagine? We hate each other and we have to spend longer in the evening. And it cost them an absolute fortune to do. And all they needed was a packet of hobnobs. You can change a culture with something very small, with a tea light on the table at dinner, or tea, or supper, whatever it is you call it, can't you? Here's a story from a school gate, just to give you a completely different zone. I was talking to a mum, and also a part-time worker. She has three children at the time, under 11, and she's also got a part-time job. And she said, I'm struggling to think about how to, you know, how to apply this stuff at the school gate. So I said, tell me about the school gate culture where you are. And he said, well, where I am, it's mainly mums who bring the kids in. And these are her words, not mine. I wouldn't dare use these words, okay? She said, the alpha females, they come in and they stride in and they're busy, they're in a rush. And they're quick. Got to run, bye, cheer, lovely to see you. They're off, woof, woof. And they're busy and they look purposeful. And because busyness is an idolatry in our culture at every level, men, women, everybody, you know. If I'm busy, I'm important. If I'm not busy, somebody asks me, are you busy? No, not really. Oh, purposeful, you know, just going, oh, you're not busy, you're not overwhelmed, you're not absolutely cracking up. There is a kind of idolatry around that. Anyway, so there's a kind of status about that, isn't there? Was a kind of status. And actually, they probably are busy. They do have children. They do have jobs. It's a hard thing to do. You know, it's a hard thing to do. They're juggling this and they are juggling that. So this isn't easy. She's not being judgmental, but she's just saying this is the way that it is. He says, I'm busy too. You know, I've got a half-time job and three kids under 11 sounds like a job in itself. We've been there. So I said, well, what could you do? And she thought about it. And what she decided to do, this is really, really radical stuff. She decided to walk slowly. That's it. And what do you think happened? She walked slowly. I asked her 3 weeks later, so how's it going? Well, I'm walking slowly. And suddenly she appears available. I'm not running away. Of course, sometimes she is running away. Sometimes she is really, you know, pressed. You know, one of the kids left their homework behind. She's left one of the kids behind, whatever it might be. You know, but when she can, she walks slowly. And so I'm having all these conversations. I'm reconnecting with people. And she then said, apart from anything else, I feel so much more human. Now, at one level, you could say that's a very small thing. It is a small thing. Never despise the day of small things. But it's also very radical because she is not being conformed to a culture of idolatry, of busyness. She's coming against that culture. So I wonder, is there something you might do to mold the culture in your context? If that's what I call a missional adjustment. And then there are, if you like, well, there's all kinds of things, really. Just trying to work out whether I want to tell you this story. I don't. Then there's being a mouthpiece for truth and justice. Well, again, at a very simple level, it's just stopping gossip. It's just stopping gossip. It doesn't have to be Tiananmen Square. There are lots of causes, and there are lots of causes to get behind. I mean, we heard about slavery yesterday. You know, go to base camp. There are lots of things where injustice is happening in the world, and it's good for us to pray, and as God leads us into a particular thing, to stand for it. But actually, at a basic level, it could just be snuffing out gossip. One teacher told me about how she tried to do it. There was a child in this school who was, shall we say, awkward. And there was a kind of narrative bring up around this child. Whenever a teacher talked about this child, it was always negative. And actually, she thought, well, it's not always like that, is it? And the trouble with that is that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, because then all that people are looking for is the negative. They can't see anything else. So she decided, without being sort of too pie about it, when anybody did that, she said, well, it's interesting you say that, because yesterday, this is what he did. Isn't that great? Now, of course, sometimes you've just got to listen. But it was a determination to not allow this particular way of seeing this boy to be the truth, because it wasn't the truth. Of course, sometimes that takes courage. And then there is, of course, and ministering, being a messenger for the gospel. And an absolutely vital thing to be about, as you know. Now, I'm not going to spend a long time on this. You've probably had done lots of work on this. But clearly, this is something that the Lord wants us to do in relationship with people over time. And when we're out there, it doesn't happen instantly. And our real challenge, usually, is to maintain intention, to be alert to the Lord, to trust him for the opportunities, to be seeking, as we seek perhaps the Lord would show us, just one person that he wants us to be concerned unto salvation for. I'm going to pray for them, I'm going to name them to somebody, and we're going to be buddies about praying for them. Find a buddy. You don't go into that front line, perhaps, two by two, but pray for somebody two by two. So the thing about these is they all are components of witness, essentially, because it's very tough to talk about a God of love if you're treating a colleague terribly. It's very tough to talk about a God of love if you know your neighbor can no longer, if you like, cut their hedge, and you've got an industrial hedge trimmer at home, and it would take you 32 seconds. It's tough to tell somebody that God cares about every aspect of their life if you obviously don't think that your work is significant. It's tough to talk about a God of justice if you have favorites. But the opposite is also true. If you don't have favorites, it's much easier to talk about a God of impartiality and justice. If you are being kind to people, it's much easier to talk about a kind God. They've seen it. It's consistent. So now I'm going to give you an opportunity for a few minutes to talk to a couple of people. Which of these M's do you feel like you are gifted at? Or another way of asking the question, let me just flick through slightly. There we go. Can you think of a time when God worked through you? Which M did you notice? So a few, you're going to have to say something like, God has worked through me. And rejoice in it. Don't be shy. We need to hear these stories from one another of how God works. So have a go for a few minutes, and then I'll call us back. Okay. I'm sorry to stop you. I'm failing to stop you. All right, so if you could draw that conversation to close for a moment, just so that I can not abuse the time. I just want to say about this framework two things. One is, I hope you found that helpful, but I would say to you, there is a book, but there's also a streamed course. And I know a number of you have done this course. The power of this is when you do it with a group, because then you help each other see it. And you also get to know the places where each other are during the week. And without being boastful about this, the DVD film resource of this has had more impact, testimony from church leaders and individuals about its impact on their lives than anything we've produced in the last 10 years. And maybe everything else was no good, but you know, I just want to commend the group thing to you. The people of God help the people of God see what God is doing in them. That's what we're there for. Now, of course, and the danger with all these sorts of things, and there is a version that Urban Saints have done for 7 to 11s and 11-14s. There's a version that Festival have done for 16 to 18-year-olds. So they're all, you can find those on our website. So it goes across the church. The danger with these sorts of models, of course, is that, you know, you came in here thinking, you're not going to have any questions today, I can tell you that. I've got one of these models, they become oppressive. You know, I thought all I had to do was be a good egg and share the gospel every moment, every chance I got. Now I've got to be a 6M disciple. I thought all I needed to do was just wait for an opportunity to share the gospel. What a lovely day it is today. Yes, it was just like this when I gave my life to the Lord. Would you like to hear about it? No! Now I've got to be the 6M disciple. That is not what this is. This is not another set of hurdles to make everybody feel guilty. This is to fuel your imagination, both for how God has already been working through you. I guarantee I could get 20 books from this room if we just sat down and had time to hear your stories about God has already worked through you and how he might in the future. And that's what we long to see. Lord, let's pray. Father God, you have appointed us for fruitfulness, transferred us from the dominion of darkness into the kingdom of your beloved Son. He has sent his Spirit, and extraordinarily, he who appointed us as vice regents at the beginning appoints us as disciples, learners of Jesus, to go and be his hands, his feet, his lips in the world. He has appointed us for fruitfulness. Lord, help us to see how you have indeed already been working through our lives and give you praise for that, as David does in the Psalms. Give you thanks for that, as David does in the Psalms. And help us to help other people see, to encourage them to see that, yes, look how God is working through you. Look what God has done. Not so that it accrues to us as pride or presumptuousness, but so that we indeed give you the glory. And grow in confidence, Lord, that indeed you are alive and that we are not dead stones, we are not dead bricks, we are living stones carrying the fragrance of Christ wherever we may go, whatever our circumstances. Lord, we bow in awe at this privilege that you've given us to represent you. And we ask you, Lord, to help us day by day to do that in the power of your Spirit, to the glory of Christ, pointing people to the Father. And all God's people said, Amen. Amen. Thank you very much indeed.